Welcome, one and all, to episode 92 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, just to confuse me even more than normal, we have a guest on the show, and his name is Justin. He is Justin Mello of DraftBreakdown.com. We're keeping it in the family tonight. Justin does some video editing and some writing at the site. And he wanted to jump on the podcast, and we're happy to have him because he's really tuned into the group of five, the small school prospects, and he is going to absolutely carry the load. We're going to make him the Ezekiel Elliott of this show and just have him, and we'll be the Dak Prescott's riding on the coattails. I mean, Dak's great. But Justin, how's it going, man?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. You know, Justin Mello, the other Justin here, he does a lot of interviews. Also does work for the Draft Wire. So this is a prolific young guy. And, you know, this is kind of how Seth and I used to be. We used to have our hands in a lot of different, you know, projects. But now we pretty much just stick to this. And we lean on guys like you, Justin, to fill us in on some stuff. So we got some great group of five talk coming up. We're going to roll through the ACC because there's some interesting players that we have to talk about there before the season starts. Season's right around the corner. We got a smattering of games on Saturday and then kicks into full swing next week. So we're raring to go.
We made it, boys. We're here.
And this week we have a look at the ACC, and it's really talented. We're going to fly through them, put in the group of five with them. And like we said, let Mello carry that part of the show and really kind of drive home all of that. But we'll get started with the ACC. And as always, and for those of you that don't know, we're adding Notre Dame to this like the NCAA does, except they're not part of the ACC. They just are part of the ACC schedule. So we'll talk about some Notre Dame prospects here as well. The quarterbacks, as always, to start with, and two guys that are going to be heavily scrutinized this year, talked about, discussed, and then one guy that's not good and is going to get the first round grad transfer boost this year. We'll start with Lamar Jackson, the reigning Heisman candidate, second team preseason All-American behind Sam Darnold, who's thrown like 250 passes in his college career, but apparently is a better college quarterback than Lamar.
So is another guy we're going to talk about a little bit later, right?
Right, exactly. And we're already seeing the conversations and the questions. And quite honestly, I've not done the research on what his athletic ability is outside of I know how athletic he looks when he's actually on the field and playing. So if you have those numbers, Justin, enlighten me. But the conversation of moving to wide receiver outside of his thin frame, completely asinine, I don't understand why that's always our first conversation with a guy like Lamar Jackson, who is a better runner than he is a thrower right now, but has all the tools you would want.
Yeah, Jackson, I do have some numbers on Jackson. He was a 4.7 guy in the 40 coming out of high school, but since then he's been timed around 4.4 and possibly even faster than that. And that's what it looks like he's running out there because he looks like he's playing at a different speed. And we've even heard some Mike Vick comparisons as far as how he plays as a collegiate. You know, it really kicked into high gear this summer when Booger McFarland, the former NFL defensive lineman, he tweeted that Lamar Jackson would have to move to receiver at the NFL level. And I think Jackson said something like the only thing he could catch is shotgun snaps. So he kind of just nipped that right in the bud. I think ultimately somebody's going to fall in love with him as a strong-armed athlete and think that they can improve the accuracy, ball placement, and whatever other concerns that people have. Yeah, I do think it's silly, especially in recent years, that we're talking about trying to move this guy to a different position. He's coming off, he's the Heisman winner and has a good chance of winning back-to-back Heisman. When a guy like that talks about how he can't catch, I don't think we need to try and move this guy to receiver.
Yeah, I think it's extremely premature to have such conversations about him moving to receiver. I mean, if you put on the tape from 2016, compare it to 2015, he got a lot better as a quarterback last year. So I think it's really unfair to write him off at this point. I mean, the guy's an electric playmaker. 51 touchdowns last year, you know, more than 1,500 rush yards, but there was also 3,500 pass yards. Completion percentage jumped up from 54 in 2015 to 56 last year. Ideally, I'd like to see him get over 60% this year, but it's really premature to write the guy off as a quarterback.
Kind of reminds me of Braxton Miller's situation, and Miller ultimately moved to wide receiver, but it was only because his shoulder was completely shot after a couple of shoulder injuries that caused him to miss an entire season. If Jackson hurts his shoulder, then we can maybe talk about moving to receiver, but I kind of want to keep him at quarterback and see what he can do.
I will say this, if you're going to knock, I would think it would be the Bobby Petrino quarterback horror show that's been coming through the NFL. So if you're going to, you know, knock Jackson for anything.
Don't let draft Twitter hear you knocking a guy for what school he went to or who his coach was.
Right, exactly. But that's my point. Like, I don't understand the desire and the reasoning behind this. And it's silly to me. Let the kid, I mean, worst case scenario, you let the kid fail at quarterback and then you move him. You know, we talked about Nick Fitzgerald on Tuesday's show, and it's kind of the same thing. Maybe, you know, does Fitzgerald have to play tight end at the next level? I mean, this is a guy that's only completing 56% of his passes. Why isn't that the same conversation? To the next guy, DeAndre Francois. Will he even declare redshirt sophomore from Florida State? Now, he's going to get the questions of size, right? Like this is going to be more size than it is anything else with Francois.
NFL Draft Scout listed him at under 6'1", I think, or right around 6'1". And then Florida State lists him at 6'2". So
he's going to come in at 6 foot flat.
Let's say 6'1". He's still going to get the question marks. And we knew Trubisky was over 6'2", and there were rumors that he was going to come in at 6'1". Francois is probably most known for his courage in standing in there and just taking an absolute beating last year as a redshirt freshman, but he had some really big games, and then he has some really erratic performances as well. I think his passing in the bowl game against Michigan was erratic. You see some great flashes, but you don't see the consistency, but it's a redshirt freshman season too. So that's kind of a harsh, we don't want to be too harsh on him. He does have a very good arm. The height ultimately shouldn't matter if he can find throwing lanes and make the throws. He's a player who could come out after his redshirt sophomore year, especially if Florida State makes a playoff run or something like that. But I think he's probably best served at least playing a third season.
I mean, yeah, he's an athletic kid with a strong arm. He's got a real big arm. And like you mentioned, He's tough. No one's going to question that. He really stood in there last year, and he took a beating behind that mess that they called an offensive line. You know, when you put the tape on, one thing I notice about him is he's got a quick, smooth throwing motion. And FSU, you know, they ask him to do some NFL things. He takes snaps from under center, and he goes through his progressions. Now, his placement needs a little work, and as you mentioned, he might be a guy who declares after this year, and he's a bit of – you know, he's a bit of an unknown right now in the sense that he's got some upside. Where do you place him in this quarterback class right now? I don't think anyone knows, but I think people are certainly intrigued by him.
Speaking of intrigued, the third guy we want to talk about from the ACC is Max Brown. He's a graduate transfer from USC. He actually was the player who lost his job to Sam Darnold last year. And he comes to Pitt, and he was named the starter just a couple days ago. So Max Brown, before the season even starts, I'm ready to crown him, guys. I'm ready to crown him as this year's Tom Savage, Jeff Driscoll, Davis Webb, grad transfer, who's guaranteed to get some early round hype, especially as we get closer to the actual 2018 draft. And if we see, if they set things up like they did for Nate Peterman last year, who was another transfer, although he is a two-year transfer player from Tennessee, if they set things up like that, Max Brown could put up some nice numbers, and then they'll say he ran some pro-style things because he took snaps under center. They love that stuff, and Max Brown is guaranteed to be this year's hype monster. You heard it here in August from the Draft Breakdown podcast.
We're ready for the 117 career throws, I believe it is, for Max Brown to get just completely pushed to – to the nines at this point. Sorry, 112. I gave him too much credit. So, and he's thrown two touchdowns and two interceptions. So you can't really get much better than what he's done so far in his career. And so we're ready for the hype here on the Draft Breakdown podcast.
Yeah, I mean, well, unlike Francois and Jackson's, no one's going to question his size, 6'4", 230. So right off the gate, teams, yeah, right, 6'4", 230. So right off the gate, teams are going to be intrigued by his size. He's got a real big arm. He's an athletic kid, too. He can pick up yards with his legs. That's one thing I noticed.
When you look at the players to watch in the ACC, there's just so many. So we're going to fly through these guys as quick as we can. We kind of tried to group them into teams. Justin, go ahead and get us started with the reigning national champion, Clemson Tigers.
Big-time defensive lineman, and they've been known to produce defensive linemen in the last few years. Christian Wilkins is billed as a top-end athlete, extremely productive player to this point. He's got the size of production, the athleticism that I love in prospects. I fully expect this guy to rise to the area of being talked about as a top 15, top 10 pick. That's how highly touted this guy is. The other guy I wanted us to talk about was the receiver Deion Kane, who now becomes the go-to guy in a school that has produced a lot of early-round receivers lately, from DeAndre Hopkins to Sammy Watkins to this year Mike Williams going seventh overall. Justin, what's your take? Have you got a chance to dig in at all to either Wilkins or Kane or both?
Yeah, I've dug into both a little. One thing that I noticed about Wilkins is, you know, he mainly plays the five tech for Clemson. He's a real athletic kid for his size. He anchors at the point of attack. But really, in the NFL, I think he's a three tech guy. He's got a lot of potential as a pass rusher from the interior. So I'm really intrigued by him. And, you know, he put up some numbers last year, 13 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks. But really, I think he's just scratching the surface of what he's capable of. And I'm excited to see him, you know, get into that, to get into that role, into that three tech role, where I think he can do a lot more damage from. And regarding Deion Kane, as you mentioned, I'm excited to see him as the guy, you know, now that Mike Williams is gone. It's probably going to take some time for him to gel with Kelly Bryant, you know, replacing Watson, obviously. But Kane's a fast kid. He's a threat to score every time he touches the ball. But, you know, he checks in around 6'1", so his size allows him to do more than just that. He's not a one-dimensional player. So I'm excited to watch him this year. He's one of the guys I'm most excited to watch.
The thing about Kane that pops out is 19 yards per catch last year and 9 touchdowns on only 38 receptions. You know, he had to share the touches with Mike Williams. He had to share with Jordan Leggett, the tight end, and Artavis Scott. And all three of those guys are gone now. This is a player in Kane who has averaged 18.1 yards per catch over his first two seasons in college. I really think he's going to see a spike in that production. And you see that he's a big play guy right from the get-go. He was a 4.5, high 4.5 kid coming out of high school, but I fully expect him to also have improved on that number. And at 6'1", 210 pounds, I think he's another riser and could follow in the footsteps of these past guys that rose all the way into the first round, maybe late first round.
Next, we have the Florida State Seminoles who, I mean, let's be honest, a game right out the gate, Alabama's going to be big-time favorites, but that's going to have national championship intrigue from the beginning. And they're playing Alabama. Florida State has just some of the best talent in the NCAA right now. We talked about Francois earlier. Derwin James, you and I have talked about, you know, safety, linebackers, hybrids. Jamal Adams went 6th last year. That seemed high to us. But James seems like he's a better prospect than what Adams was. And I want to say that very carefully, because not that we thought Adams was bad by any means, but, and then Travaris McFadden, we've seen conversation that he could be cornerback 1 this year. And then of course, Josh Sweat, all talented players. Mello, what do you think of Derwin James? Is he really a guy that can be a top, you know, 10 pick, coming off the injury?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the main thing for him, obviously, is he's got to prove that he can stay healthy this year. You know, he tore his meniscus week two. He played just two games, so that obviously, you know, that hurts. But, I mean, what a dynamic, dynamic player. I mean, what can't he do? What can't he do? In the box, you know, cover, hit, you know, the run, he hits, he covers, he blitzes. He's a phenomenal player. He launches like a missile to the ball. He's fantastic. I loved Jamal Adams last year, so I was on the opposite side of you guys on that one. And I like James just as much, if not more. Absolutely top 10 talent.
You mentioned that he had the meniscus injury. 6'3", 211 pounds is what he's listed at. And as a freshman, 9.5 tackles for loss. So there's that blitzing coming into play. They're going to wonder about his ball skills, but we also saw – similar type of production out of Jabril Peppers, especially because he had to play linebacker. So Peppers ends up going 25th overall, I think, and he had missed time with an injury during his career as well. So James comes back fully healthy, plays a full season. I think he's going to be one of the elite prospects in this class and a potential top five pick. As far as McFadden, he's coming off a season with 8 picks. He's a 6 foot. 6'3", almost 200 pounds, but he also has a shoulder injury concern. So he's also got this a little bit of red flag. He had missed spring practice because of a torn labrum in his left shoulder. Sweat, the other guy Seth mentioned, is another player who's had an injury history. Left ACL injury, left meniscus tear last September. I mean, how bad are these injuries going to come into play for these Florida State kids? Because this is a really, really talented and highly touted trio.
Well, McFadden has to stay healthy this year. Again, as you mentioned, he's had some issues. But you mentioned the 8 interceptions a year ago. Here's another stat for you. Quarterbacks completed 43% of their passes when targeting him last year. He is a very, very good corner. He has all the tools to be a shutdown corner at the next level. He's incredibly smooth in coverage. He's just, yeah, right now I think he's the best corner in college football.
Sweat is the guy I worry about the most because of the double knee injury. And it's a shame because at 250 pounds, he runs like around a 4.5, maybe sub 4.5. And he's going to have a crazy vertical, crazy broad jump. He's an explosive player. But you just worry about how much that explosiveness can hold up and how much that speed can hold up with those knee issues. And it's the fact that it's to the same knee has to be concerning.
One guy I forgot to mention from Florida State, wide receiver Auden Tate. What are your thoughts on Tate, Mello?
6'5", 225. And you can tell it pops up on tape. He routinely wins the contested catch. He's a big-bodied receiver, and he knows how to use it to his advantage. He's got a large catch radius. And he's a nice combination of size and strong hands. Now, he's not an overly athletic guy. One thing I'll be watching closely this year is I want to see him consistently separate. I think that's something that he struggles to do. And, you know, we're far away from the combine, but he's a guy whose 40-yard dash I think is going to be really important. He needs to be in that Mike Williams range for his stock not to take a hit. He's got to run no worse than 4.55.
Is he more Kelvin Benjamin or more Mike Evans?
I think he's more Kelvin Benjamin. Yeah, no way. He's not Mike Evans, not in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think he's that caliber of an athlete of what we saw to Mike Evans. You mentioned the 40 time. We don't have a 40 time for Tate out of high school, but we have a vertical jump, and it was 30.8-inch vertical. So hopefully he's done work on that lower body strength because that doesn't suggest a lot of explosiveness, but – what you see on tape looks really good. The other thing, though, that's a little bit concerning is only 25 catches to this point in his career. It might be one of those cases where what we see looks good, but that's like all his highlights. That's always a little eyebrow-raising to me, but I know that the Dynasty / Devy fantasy football community really likes Auden Tate.
Notre Dame was atrocious last year. And somehow they come into 2018 with maybe the top or offensive tackle and wide receiver prospect in the draft. Just think, if DeShone Kizer would have went back, he probably would have been the top quarterback entering this year as well, going into the season. We'll start
He would have been in a competition with Brandon Wimbush because that's how Brian Kelly rolls. But
Mike McGlinchey, a lot of people were surprised he didn't come out last year. Notre Dame has turned out a bevy of offensive linemen as of late.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about McGlinchey last year when I was watching Notre Dame, and once I found out that he wasn't going to declare, I kind of just tailed off from watching him. But he does have starts at both right tackle and left tackle, which is a plus because that allows him the versatility. Depending on how he tests, then he can be penciled in at either spot. Obviously, the more athletic he is, the more chance he has of ending up at left tackle. He looks more like a right tackle, a projected right tackle to me, just from what I've seen. I did mistakenly think that he was going to be a 24-year-old rookie. Turns out I had the date of birth wrong. So he's actually still going to be 23 when he enters the draft. So that's good that he's not 24. I always think 24 is kind of a, not a red flag, but an orange flag, because it suggests to me that a guy's probably maxed out at that point. So McGlinchey, fifth-year senior, and he's going to get his third full season as a starter. And that's another plus in my book for offensive linemen. Anybody who starts at a high-level program for 3 years or 4 years, I think they come in ahead because they face tougher competition as far as defensive linemen and pass rush. And they've been involved with getting continuity with their line mates, with their teammates, over a long period of time. And I think that's important for linemen.
Equanimous St. Brown, is he the top receiver in coming into this year, Justin Mello?
Yeah, I think he is. Or he's in my top two at least. First thing I notice about him is, 6'4", 205. That's a big kid there, but he's such a good route runner for his size. I think that's the most important thing about him. Is guys who are usually that, guys who are that big are usually a little, they're not very smooth route runners, but he's an excellent route runner. He's got a special skill set for his size. He doesn't rely solely on his frame, which I love. Now, I think he's a little bit raw, but I do think he has all the tools to be special at the next level. One thing I'd like to see out of him this year is, despite that size, I find he doesn't consistently high point the football. So I think that, he doesn't attack it at its highest point. So that's something I'd like to see change this year.
Man, he is thin. He is really thin, 6'5", just barely over 200 pounds. They had him clocked at 4'5" in the spring, which I think is fast enough for a guy at that height. And he's got those long strides, and we've seen him separate down the field. I don't think that's going to be an issue for him. He averaged over 16 yards a catch last year. He was their big play guy, no doubt about it. And the thing that we also know is that he had a shoulder injury in 2015, showed no ill effects of that injury last season. So I like to see that recovery from an injury history. One fact I have about Equanimous St. Brown is that he speaks three languages. And he has a younger brother named Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Virginia Tech, on the other hand, has a talented cornerback, something that they seem to do every couple of years, have a really strong cornerback prospect. I'm going to butcher this last name, but Brandon Fasison? I don't know.
I think it's Faison.
Faison?
Yeah, I'm not 100%. Mello, do you know?
Yeah, it's Faison.
Okay. We always count on Seth to mispronounce names, though. That's part of the drinking game. So,
it is.
So Faison and D'Arnold, and, we've already got people half drunk.
That's right. But, Mello, what do you think of Brandon here?
Well, the first thing that jumps out to me about him is the ball skills. 11 pass breakups last year. He's a good, smart kid. He's already graduated with a degree in biology. When you put on the tape, you see a corner that explodes to the ball. He's really smooth in coverage. He's got, he's got the hips for it. He blankets his man down the sideline in coverage. One question I have about him is he just had wrist surgery this offseason, So again, he's got to stay healthy throughout the year, but 6'2", 200 pounds. I mean, he's got all the tools to play corner at a high level.
As you mentioned, he's already graduated, so we know he's an older kid too. He's going to turn 20. He will actually turn 23 right in a couple weeks here. And so that means going into his rookie year, he'll be 24-year-old rookie already. And I just mentioned that with McGlinchey, when I thought he was on the older side, that would be an orange flag. So you got that with Faison. We'll talk about real quick, risers, sliders. My pick for riser out of this class is from the ACC is Kentavious Street, the defensive lineman from NC State. He is billed as a freak athlete. He was a guy on Bruce Feldman's freak list. He's a player who's over 280 pounds and is expected to run his 40 time in the 4.5s. Incredibly strong dude too. He's been productive on the field as well. So Street is probably at this point in the draft community is a little bit overshadowed by his teammate Brandon Chubb, but Street might actually end up being the better prospect or maybe more highly drafted prospect when all is said and done. Melo, who's your riser out of the ACC?
Now, you're going to call me crazy, but give me a second to explain here. I'm going with Harold Landry, Boston College pass rusher. Now, you're thinking 16 and a half sacks last year, 69 pressures. How could he be a riser? Well, I interviewed him about a month ago, and I asked him if he had received a grade from the NFL Draft Advisory Board. And he told me that what he heard was that 3-4 teams, you know, teams that employ a 3-4 defense, were higher on him than teams who run a 4-3 defense. And what the grade that a 3-4 team had on him was a second-round grade. And that is just crazy to me to think that 3-4 teams liked him and they thought he was a second-round kid. No chance. I mean, I think he's a top 15 talent in this draft class. I think he'll be drafted in the top 15. He's got the ideal speed to consistently bend the corner. He's today's pass rusher. Now, I got a quote from him here from my interview, and you tell me that you don't love this kid. You know, when we were talking about his pass rush arsenal a little, he told me, "I wish there was a way for me to bend as low to the ground as motorcycles do when the rider's knee touches the ground after they turn a corner. I want to be that flexible." I mean, yeah, you can sign me up for this kid.
That's a great visual for a pass rusher, too. I got to tell you, to be honest, I agreed that he was a day two guy had he come out last year. So I'm excited to see him this year. I kind of figured that he had got a grade like that when he decided to come back. So it makes sense to me. And if he can develop that type of bend, there's no doubt that he's going to be touted as, like you said, top 15 pick. You cannot get past that production, not only the 16 and a half sacks, but 7 forced fumbles last season. That's unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, the kid's a baller. He's going to produce this year again. He's going to light up the combine. I'll be shocked if he doesn't go in the top 15 next year.
But who's your slider going into this year?
My slider is going to be Jester Wea from Pitt. He's the receiver that's gotten a little bit of summer hype. And I just think he's kind of a one-year wonder at this point. And I'm not sure that when it's all said and done, that he's going to test out that well. He's another big guy like we talked about with Auden Tate, 6'5". I think he's 6'4", 6'5", about 220 pounds. But I think he's going to be hard-pressed to run in that high 4-5 range. So even though he was a big play guy for Pitt and was getting open deep with Peterman, you've got one season of production from a fifth-year senior, a guy who's going into his fifth year. And I just don't want to bank on a player like that at all. I think he's not a guy I would have watched this summer in anticipation of him being a highly touted prospect going into the year. Melo, who's your slider?
Yeah, I mean, Justice might give me some flack for this one, but I'm going with Virginia defensive end Andrew Brown. The reason being is, okay, he comes out of nowhere last year. You know, 6 sacks, 13 tackles for loss. I like those numbers, but I want to know why he sat on the bench for 2 years on a bad football team behind non-NFL prospects. I just don't get it. I know what I'm missing, but his first 2 seasons combined, 10 tackles and 1 sack. He comes out of nowhere last year, but again, I want to see some consistency this year. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it yet. There's been some motivation concerns with him, so color me on the we'll see boat with this kid.
Yeah, kind of the same idea with him and with Wea, in that you just have a 1 year to go on from a guy who's been in the program for so long. And we know from past drafts, and it's really better when a player has breakout earlier in his career. Those guys tend to pan out better than the guys who break out late in their career. And I've had problems in recent years with late breakout guys like Kevin Dodd, for example. That's just not my type of player either. I agree. All right, Seth, we're going to move into the group of five small school guys.
And I'm excited about this because I'm going to learn as much as our listeners do tonight. I know some of the big names and guys that are just being over-touted like Josh Allen, but, there's other guys that, Mello's going to really help us out on here and give us some good information. But as always, starting with the quarterbacks, we'll save Allen for last. Quentin Flowers, to start things off. What can you tell us about Quentin Flowers, Justin?
Well, he's listed at 6 foot, 210 pounds. Now, I'm not sure, that there's more a more dynamic playmaker and athlete in college football right now. He's definitely up there near the top of the list. He's one of the most exciting players to watch in college football, and he could potentially be the wild card of this quarterback class. I mean, he ran for 1,500 yards last year. He threw for 2,800 more. But is his play style one that's effective in the NFL? Do we really see an NFL future for him? I mean, and the height concerns are the first thing that's going to jump out at people. And then the play style. I love the kid, and I want to like him at the next level, but it's really hard to justify for him.
Western Kentucky continues to have guys that are going to put up huge numbers. But I do want to hit on this. Their quarterback, Mike White, who we're going to talk about in a second, is a transfer from South Florida. So South Florida recruited two talented quarterbacks in Flowers and Mike White. And then you have teams like Arizona State out in the Pac-12 who can't recruit a single talented quarterback. College football is amazing.
Or basically the entire SEC out,
That's true, too.
Always struggling to produce quarterbacks. So Mike White was he's being touted early on by Eric Galco at Optimum Scouting. And obviously Western Kentucky's been a prolific offense. And last year was White's first year as a starter, coming in after their most prolific passer in the school history, Brandon Doughty, had moved on as a draft pick with the Miami Dolphins. So Mello, when it comes to White, is he going to be able to match last year's production now that he's got a new head coach this year? How tough is that going to be on him?
Well, that'll definitely be tough, and it'll be an adjustment period in the beginning. But, 4,300 pass yards last year, 37 touchdowns. You're talking about a guy who led the most explosive offense in the country. They were the top scoring offense in the nation. He's got a cannon for an arm, but he's also accurate. And I agree with Galco. I see some hype behind this kid. He's 6'3", 220. He's not going to have any size concerns. If he's as good this year as he was last year, he's going to shoot up draft boards. He's poised in the pocket. He hangs tough with pressure in his face. Here's a stat that I pulled up on him. Under pressure last year, he had a quarterback rating of 107.4. So I'm super intrigued with this kid.
That's pretty impressive. He's definitely going to miss Taywan Taylor, a player who, for a guy to come out of Western Kentucky as a receiver, being under 6 feet tall and still go in the third round and making the impression that he's making in summer, in training camp and preseason for the Tennessee Titans, that's a guy White is really going to miss him. He's also going to miss running back Anthony Wales, who scored almost 30 touchdowns last year. He was a dual threat running back, receiver out of the backfield. But blast from the past, Leon Allen, a guy who's missed most of the last two seasons with a devastating knee injury. He is actually back. I'm not sure how much of a role he's going to have yet, but we'll see. We'll see how the weapons are for Mike White this year and having a new head coach. I think he's got a lot of challenges. So if he can rise to the occasion and continue to steer Western Kentucky in the direction they've been going the last few years, then you might have something there. I do worry about the guy's mobility, though.
Well, and you missed one player, and I know that this may seem silly to some people, but, you know, they had, for my money, probably the best offensive lineman come out last year in Forrest Lamp, who unfortunately was cursed to go to the LA Chargers and be injured right away. So how do they replace a guy at Western Kentucky who was a second-round draft pick and one of the better offensive linemen coming out into the NFL in 2017? Going right along, Josh Allen. The hype is, I don't want to say out of control, but out of control.
I would say it's unprecedented from what we've seen for a group of five quarterback to have already been hyped as the potential number one overall pick starting right after the 2017 draft concluded. So right from there, I think it was Todd McShay said that. And certainly the hype had already built up even before that. We had our own Brian Perez of Draft Breakdown, the Godfather. He suggested that Josh Allen could go three overall in the 2017 draft. I think Matt Miller also mocked Josh Allen at one point, third overall. And this is a player who ultimately decided not to declare for 2017 for a draft that saw three quarterbacks picked in the top 12. So it's kind of crazy to me that a guy, people are so sure, so certain that scouts and NFL people think is better than any quarterback in 2017 wouldn't have come out and just presumably been picked ahead of all these guys like Trubisky, like Patrick Mahomes, and like Deshaun Watson, who are all top 12 picks.
Well, and the crazier thing to me, and I was making fun of Max Brown and his 112 pass attempts, career pass attempts. Josh Allen's only thrown 379 career pass attempts. It's not like this is a guy who has – and people might say, well, he comes from a better system. Well, probably, but we're okay with that little number of pass attempts on film and the fact that he's only completed 56% of those passes. You know, we were hard on DeShone Kizer, even though if you take out the game that was played in, you know, a hurricane – he was at that 60% mark, and it was still like, all right, is this really, you know, a guy that you can trust accurately? And yet Allen is getting hyped as, like Justin said, the number one pick, the number one prospect. It's crazy to me, and I hope the kid goes out there and balls out. I never want to see a kid too poorly. I could care less how wrong I am every single time. Because this is a guy's livelihood, you know, and I'm out here doing this for fun. But the setup for failure is just so big for Allen that can he possibly meet the expectations, Mello?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, I'm one of those guys who's bought into the hype. When you look at him and you break him down, okay, 6'4", 222 he's listed at. So he's got the ideal size the NFL wants him in a quarterback's. He runs a pro-style offense, or as close to a pro-style offense as it gets in college ball that, you know, Craig Bohl asks him to run. You know, he's asked to make reads. He takes snaps under center. He scans the field. He goes through his progressions, and he's expected to make all the throws. I mean, the playbook is wide open for this guy. He's an athletic kid, 527 rush yards last year, 7 touchdowns on the ground as well, 28 TD passes. At the sample size, I don't think that's going to bother NFL teams as much as it bothers us. I mean, Mitch Trubisky was a one-year starter, and he still went, you know, number two overall last year. So I really don't think the sample size is going to bother him. And for me, the pro-style offense thing, I think, is huge in the eyes of the NFL. You know, they just see it as such an easy, smoother transition. If he was in the draft last year, he would have been the second quarterback on my board. I still would have had Trubisky one, but I would have had Allen two. I have him number one going into this year. I do think if he can play in 2017 like he did in 2016, yeah, I do think he'll be the number one player selected next year.
You know, I want this guy to convert me because I'm such a doubter, and I don't want to be a jerk about this. I'm going to go to Iowa and see him play in person against Iowa Hawkeyes on September 2nd. But I never miss a chance to break this out. I tweeted this a couple of years ago after Jared Goff threw his 5-interception game against Utah. So we'll add Jared Goff now to this list because Josh Allen is a guy who also has a 5-interception game on his resume. So let's go back. In the last 7 years, drafted quarterbacks with 5-interception game in college, Goff, Garrett Gilbert, Landry Jones, Sean Renfrey, Ricky Stanzi, and Nathan Enderle. Not household names. And the last two first-rounders were Goff and Joey Harrington. So Joey Harrington, the last first-rounder before Goff, to have a 5-interception game. Now, some guys stink so bad they never are going to get a chance to have that many attempts to throw a 5-interception game. But it's still kind of a really it's a small sample, but you'd think there'd be one winner out of that bunch, and there's just not. There isn't so far. Goff has a chance to turn that around. You don't want to say that a 5-interception game. I mean, obviously, it's just that's kind of a coincidence, and it's a result of other factors that cause these guys not to succeed. It's not just having this one game, but it's the response to pressure, the accuracy issues, maybe that too much trust in the arm. There's a lot of factors that could contribute to having a 5-interception game. And Allen had his against Nebraska, and I always laugh because hilariously on the 5th interception, I believe, it was either the 4th or the 5th interception, Nathan Jerry, who's now a linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles, he picked it off, returned it, got tackled, and then handed the ball back to Josh Allen as a final insult to injury type of thing. So, yeah, I'm ready for this guy to convert me, but I'm a huge doubter, obviously, and I was really just kind of scoffing at all the hype heading into 2017 draft. And I'm glad he came back because, you know, as you guys talked about, not a lot of pass attempts at the FBS level. He did have a year starting at junior college, and he did improve his completion percentage from junior college to under 50% now to about 56, 57% now. So he make another jump. That'd be good. He really needs it.
Yeah, he needs to get that over 60 this year. That's what I want to see. You know, I mean, he's a gunslinger, obviously. He takes a lot of risks. He takes a lot of chances. So that number's obviously affected by that. But I'd really like to see him get over 60%. That's my pet peeve with him. He's got to limit the interceptions this year. He threw 15 of them last year, and he's got to get over 60%. You mentioned the 5-interception game and some of the other quarterbacks drafted with that. How about the list of quarterbacks drafted in the first round with a completion percentage under 60%? You're looking at guys like Jake Locker. You're looking at guys like Christian Ponder. You're looking at, I believe, Joey Harrington is on that list as well.
Kyle Bowler.
You're looking at Blaine Gabbert, I think, is another guy who was on that list. So to me, that's
how
a much more
dare
expensive.
You speak ill of Blaine Gabbert.
That to me is a much more worrisome list. Now, of course, it's not the end-all, be-all. It's not an exact science. Matt Ryan was under 60% as well as last year. He's turned out pretty good. But that's more worrisome to me than anything.
And DeShone Kizer is going to be really good, even though his was under 60%. Because like Seth said, we throw out the Hurricane game to push him up over that 60%.
I'm just angry that somebody would smite poor Blaine Gabbert's name on the show.
He's got that strong arm, and he's a good athlete. I should like him a lot more because he is a gunslinger. I think it's when a guy gets hyped that I don't feel like is warranted, that really just caused me to raise an eyebrow. So I hope I can give him a fresh start. And if I don't feel like I can, then I just won't have him on my final board.
Let's end this with this question for me real quick. Mello, and that's simply how important and how much stock do we put into his first game against Iowa? Like, obviously it won't decide his fate overall, but if he goes out and craps the bed, do we really – I mean, is that going to bring his overall status down?
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, I want to see him perform well against Iowa, and it's important for him to start the season out on the right foot. But if he does crap the bed, then I'll be watching closely to how does he respond from that. You know, playing quarterback in this league, you're faced with so many challenges. You're a leader. I mean, from the day you're drafted, if you're a quarterback drafted early on, doesn't matter how old you are, you step into that locker room, it's your team right away. You know, the veterans are looking to you to lead the team. So the mental aspect of it is so important. The psych of it is so important. So if he does crap the bed against Iowa, well, then let's see how he bounces back from that. How does he handle that scrutiny? Because you know he's going to be under the microscope all year long. As you mentioned, the hype's out of control. You either love him or you doubt him. So let's see how he handles the pressure.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with you because, you know, the one big, you know, he goes and faces the Big Ten team on the road last year and throws the five picks. And then he had a really rocky first half against BYU in the bowl game. And also in one of the two games against San Diego State had one of his worst outings of the season as well. So I think that if he doesn't play at least kind of par for the course against Iowa, then you have to start doubting whether or not he can rise to the level of competition. And that's a concern for players coming from these programs that are in the group of five or lower. So I think that's where I stand with him. I think he really needs to show some improvement coming in. If he looks like the same guy that we saw in the bowl game at the end of last year, I'm going to be concerned. Like, why hasn't he got better? Because he's still a very young guy. Like, he just turned 21. He should still be on that upward swing. And kind of working against him, similar to what we were talking about with White, Josh Allen's missing Brian Hill this year. He's missing Tanner Gentry. He's missing the tight end. I think his name's Hollister, who's with New England right now in camp. And he's missing his center. A lot of guys, we heard that he didn't have a great supporting cast, but now a lot of those guys are gone and actually in NFL camps playing well. So I think he really needs a good performance against Iowa. He needs at least to keep that game close. And I think they can do it. I think they can do it because Iowa has had a lot of shuffling too. So I think it's a good road test. Obviously not an easy place to play, but and Iowa's just a couple years removed from a Rose Bowl berth. But this is a good test for him, and I think he needs to really rise to the occasion.
Melo, let's get into the other prospects in this class in the group of five and give us a couple of players to watch for you.
Well, the first guy that jumps out at you has got to be Courtland Sutton, you know, wide receiver at SMU. When you look at him, you know, who does he remind you of when you're looking at his frame? You got to think Julio Jones or AJ Green. 6'4", 220. But really what's special about him is the combination of physicality and athleticism. I mean, this guy is the blueprint for an NFL wide receiver. Now, there's a bunch of receivers in the NFL right now, you know, in the mold of Antonio Brown, who I think is the best receiver in the NFL, who are smaller guys. But I think if you give an NFL team a shot to build their ideal receiver, they're going to build one that looks exactly like Courtland Sutton. Now, I interviewed him about a month ago, and I came away really impressed with his attitude. He's got that alpha mega personality, so to speak. He wants to dominate every time he steps onto the field, and he expects to. At the same time, he's an excellent, unselfish teammate. You know, he told me, and I, you know, it'll be up to teams to decide if it's genuine or not, but he told me, look, I don't care if I end the game with one catch for 10 yards. If the defense wants to focus all their attention on me, the guy across from me is catching 10 balls, you know, for 100 yards, and we win the game, we blow them out, then I don't care. You know, the guy's all about winning. He returned for his senior season. He's graduating this year, he returned this year to graduate, which is why he went back to school this year. And he put up big numbers last year, 64 catches for over 1,200 yards, 10 TDs. He's just a prototypical guy. And excuse me on that mistake, he's not a senior, but a lot of people did expect him to come out last year. And he chose not to, but for me, he's the top guy. He's the top guy when you're talking prospects outside the Power Five.
Any idea where Courtland Sutton would have fallen had he decided to declare as a redshirt sophomore?
I didn't ask him whether he had received a grade or not. I'm sure he did. I imagine he would have been in the top 64. You know, I don't know if he would have been a first-round guy last year. You know, I think he's a first-round guy next year, though. Mm-hmm. If he goes out this year and repeats the same production that he had last year, I think absolutely he's a first-round guy. I think he's got a good shot to be the first receiver taken off the board.
To me, I felt like he was a better player than Mike Williams all along from the get-go. He reminded me a little bit of Josh Gordon running out there, the way he runs, especially running the slant routes and the way he was able to separate, even though it didn't look like he was really running that fast. Like, he had a this kind of sneaky separation for a big guy. I think that's important. Body control along the sidelines, ability to get those jump balls. He looks like a great athlete, and I think he has a basketball background, right?
That I'm not sure of, to be honest with you, but you're right. You know, athletic-wise, he's definitely more athletic than Mike Williams was or is. He's a big guy, but he's very elusive. You know, he forced 13 missed tackles last year. And I asked him about that. I said, you know, people don't expect you to be elusive. Where do you get that from? And he credits his teammates. He says a lot of the other receivers in that position room with them at SMU are smaller guys. And he says, you know, I'm not all about myself here. He likes to learn from them. He leans on them in practice. And it's all about, you know, he catches the ball and he makes a move. And that's how he practices. And he told me he does that. So when it comes to, you know, game time, that he doesn't even have to think about it. That's just the way he plays. He's very elusive for his size.
I'm a huge Sutton fan. I think he's going to be I think he'll be a first round pick this year. I was a little disappointed he didn't come out, but I think that's great that he went back to graduate, and he'll do so as a redshirt junior now, like you said, and go into. He's still a really young guy, so it's not a big deal that he came back. He's got a chance. You know, you just hope that he stays healthy. You know, you hope to God that he stays healthy. Let's talk about Richie James. This is another player that you're really familiar with, another receiver, Middle Tennessee. Richie James, I can't help but notice the way the stats look and the size. Is he a Tavon Austin? You know, Tavon Austin was an incredibly fast guy, got carries out of the backfield, little slot guy. He's apparently been misused or just hasn't really clicked in the NFL. Do you think James is going to be on that kind of track as a prospect? I mean, I don't think he's going to be a top 10 pick like Tavon, because I think NFL teams have kind of learned their lesson. But what's the kind of ceiling for where Richie James can go?
No, I think Richie's a better prospect than Tavon was. You know, 5'9", 178, I get it. He's a small guy, but 26 career games, 3,456 yards on 263 touches, 25 total touchdowns. I don't think he has a ceiling. I don't think you can box him in inside, outside, backfield. You can put him everywhere. Don't think because he's a smaller guy that you have to put him in the slot. No, he can win outside. He's undersized, obviously, but he plays big. He's a contested catch winner who attacks the ball. I think he's the most electric receiver in college football. Really dangerous with the ball in his hands, a yards after catch guy. You mentioned Josh Allen earlier, and him, if he doesn't perform against Iowa, you're worried, you know, that he doesn't rise to the occasion. Well, how has Richie risen to the occasion against the bigger programs? Alabama, 10 catches for 95 yards. 2 years consistently against Vanderbilt now, he's put over 100 yards. Specifically last year, he caught 14 balls for 183 yards against Vanderbilt, over 100 yards receiving against Missouri. The kid is special. He's special. And if teams let him slide due to his size, they'll regret it.
Yeah, those are the kind of numbers that really drew me to Taywan Taylor, too. He was another player like James coming out of the Group of Five, coming out of the Group of Five conference and putting up big numbers no matter who he was playing against, whether it was Alabama or Vanderbilt or other SEC teams, you know, whether it was bowl game or it was just week in, week out with him. And definitely see that in Richie James as well.
You know, he's got a my ball mentality, which I love. He doesn't care if the defensive back is 6'3 or 6'4. He's confident that he's going to beat him. And if when you put on the tape, he does a lot of the time. He attacks it, double coverage. I've seen it all when you put on the tape with this kid. He's a phenomenal player. He's a great kid, and he's going to be special at the next level. And I thought the same thing with Taiwan Taylor, as you mentioned. You know, I think the Titans took him at 75th overall, I believe it was. And I think at the end of the day, you'll see that teams will regret letting him last to that point. And if the same thing happens with Richie, then they'll regret it as well.
Rashad Penny is a guy that has not had a great opportunity in terms of touches, and that's simply because of who he played behind in college. But he's finally the man at San Diego State, and never going to be a better college running back. Could he be a better pro prospect?
Yeah, I think he can. You know, 5'11", 220. And as you mentioned, I'm really excited to see him in that feature back role now that Pumphrey is gone. And I'm really curious to see how he handles being that guy that defenses are going to key in on week in, week out. You know, last year, as defensive coordinators are getting ready to go up against San Diego State University, it's Pumphrey's picture on the wall. You know, that's the guy you're circling on your board that we have to stop. This year, that's Penny. So let's see how he handles it. Can he handle, you know, 300-plus carries, which I think is likely in his future for this year? That's, you know, Pumphrey got over 300 carries last year. I think Penny will get the same. But he's a good player with a versatile skill set. When you put on the tape, you watch how they utilize him. They motion him out to receiver a lot. He's got great hands. And as a runner, he's light on his feet. He's got quick feet. He's patient, though. He waits for his blocks to develop. And he navigates through the clutter a little. You know, he just goes right. He can go right up the middle out of nowhere, and you see him get through a hole that you didn't think was there. I do think he can be a better pro prospect than Pumphrey.
I love how San Diego State just swept the conference awards last year. They had Pumphrey, the offensive player of the year in the conference. That DeMonte KZ, a guy I really liked. He was defensive player of the year in the Mountain West. And then it was Penny who actually was the special teams player of the year. So this is a player who, a big back, who can return kicks. So I'm intrigued by this guy. And I do think it's kind of funny that the special teams player of the year might end up being drafted above those other two guys just because he's more of an NFL, he has more of an NFL build. We've got a couple defensive prospects that we wanted to ask you about. Jalen Ferguson, the defensive end from Louisiana Tech, and then Jamar Summers, the defensive back from Connecticut. Are these the top two defenders coming out of the group of five this year?
Yeah, I think they are. And with Ferguson, I'm super intrigued by this kid. You know, 6'5", 255 pounds, 14.5 sacks last season. He's an athletic edge defender who wreaks havoc in the backfield, man. He's got a great get-off, and you have to double-team him. And when you put on the tape, that's exactly what teams did last year. They double-teamed him time and time again. He's got powerful, active hands. You know, he's not an edge defender who's got a lot of bend. You know, he's not a Harold Landry type of defender. He's a powerful guy who's got an excellent bull rush. When I put on the tape of him, a lot of times you see him push the tackle right back into the quarterback. It's almost embarrassing for the tackle, but he's a really strong kid, and he's a smart player, too. I think he's got a high football IQ based off what I see. He's quick to sniff out the screen. Yeah, he's a good player. I'm really excited to watch him this year. As for Jamar Summers, you know, corner out of UConn, 6 foot, 185. The thing with him is he had a real big year in 2015, 8 interceptions, 3 passes deflected. He struggled to repeat that production last year. You know, they moved him around a little bit last year. He spent time at both corner and safety. 59 tackles last year. The interceptions were down from 8 to 2. He's a converted receiver, actually. He played receiver in high school, so I'm assuming that's where the ball skills come from. He's an instinctive guy who's always around the football. Now, last year, he had a really rough outing against Syracuse. He allowed more than 200 yards receiving. So, you know, people want to see how he bounces back from that up and down year that he had last year. Is his confidence broken? You know, that's something that he's going to have to show us, that he's a tough kid with strong head. He's got to bounce back from that. But he's an explosive player. He launches like a missile to the football. So I'm really, really excited to watch him this year, and I hope he bounces back from the rough year that he had last year.
Who are your top five players to watch in the MAC? I know Maction has become kind of a cult following in college football, especially when we get to Tuesday night Maction. Who are some guys for the hardcore fans to watch? Likely going to be day three guys, but just names to know.
Well, the first guy that I'm going to say is definitely not a day three guy is Chucks Okorafor, senior offensive tackle at Western Michigan, 6'5", 330. Now, he's a mauler in the run game. He's going to move you off your spot. He's a versatile guy who's made a lot of starts both at left tackle and right tackle. I believe he can also play guard if necessary. We know that NFL teams love versatility, especially across the offensive line. He's a tough kid who plays through the whistle. He aims to reach the second level and hand out punishment. And when he locks on, it's over, man. It's over. He's a tough kid. I think, actually, that he would be getting a lot more hype if it wasn't for some of the other tackles in college ball right now. You know, you guys touched on McGlinchey earlier, you know, Notre Dame tackle. There's also Connor Williams out in Texas. I think if it wasn't for those two guys, we'd be hearing a lot more buzz around this kid. And I do think he has the potential to be a first-round pick and probably the third tackle off the board next year. My number two guy to watch would be receiver Cody Thompson out of Toledo. Here's a kid who caught 64 balls last year, over 1,200 yards, 20 yards per catch. He's extremely elusive with the ball in his hands. He does his best work after the catch. He routinely creates after the catch. And how about this for a stat? When targeted last year, his quarterback's passer rating was a flat 129. To me, that's reliable as they come. You know, that's a quarterback's best friend right there. Number three, I'm going to switch over to defense. Keith Harding, cornerback out of Miami, Ohio, 5'10", 190. Explosive player, you know, plays some special teams as well. Great returner. Fluid athlete, you know, he played running back in high school. I think he flew under the radar a little bit last year because he was on a bad football team. They lost their first six games. When I put on the tape, I see a little Adoree Jackson to him. He's actually very similar to Adoree in the size department, both height and weight. He's a guy who closes in a flash. He's got that my ball mentality when it's in the air. As I mentioned, he plays special teams. He's a senior, and he's entering a senior year this year. He's a dynamic athlete who I think is only going to get better. Number four, I got a running back out of, you know, going back to Western Michigan, Javion Franklin, running back, 5'11", 228, over 1,500 total yards last year, 14 touchdowns. He's a guy who I think is probably on pace for an even bigger year this year now that Corey Davis is gone. He's a tough, powerful runner with a versatile skill set. Another guy who's a good pass catcher coming out of the backfield. I'm really excited to watch him this year. And last but not least, going back to Toledo, I got their quarterback, Logan Woodside, who threw a nation-high 45 touchdowns in 2016. When you put the tape on, you see that he's got a quick, smooth release. He's poised under pressure. He had a quarterback rating of 99.8 when under pressure last year. His connection and chemistry with the receiver I mentioned earlier, Cody Thompson, terrorized MAC defenses a year ago, and I expect more of the same in 2017 as both of them head into their final season of college ball. He's an accurate guy in all areas of the field. He had one of the highest completion percentages in the nation, both under and over 10 yards. I mean, when you talk about him and Thompson, you're talking about one of the best quarterback receiver duos in the nation. So those are my five guys from the MAC for this year.
That's awesome. Great information. And so it looks like Toledo is going to be a pretty strong team, at least on the offensive side of the ball. And then the Western Michigan tackle that you mentioned, you pronounce his name so much better than we possibly could, but there are already people saying that he's a better prospect than Taylor Moten last year, who yes. we were big fans of him on the show. We weren't big fans of Willie Beavers, the guy the year before, but that's okay. It sounds like they've got another good one there. I want you to dig deep. We're going to close this out. Give me your top two or your favorite two guys from the true small school ranks. I'm talking FCS, Division II, Division III. Dig deep. Who are your top two? Who are the guys that we need to know about going into the season?
The first guy that jumps out at me is South Dakota State tight end Dallas Goddard. You know, two things the NFL loves is big and fast. Here's a tight end who stands at 6'4 while weighing 255. They're going to drool over his size, but he runs and catches much smaller than that. This is a smooth athlete for his size. If you put on the tape last year at South Dakota State, they moved him all over the place, which again, to me, is special considering his size. I mean, I watched the guy score a rushing touchdown last year. They use him in the screen game a lot. He's just a nightmare. He's a mismatch for linebackers. He's a nightmare in the red zone. Real special kid who potentially could be the top tight end in the class. Staying with South Dakota State, I got wide receiver Jake Winicky. Here's a guy who's 6'3", 215. He checks all those height-speed boxes, put on the tape, and he's hard to stop one-on-one. I highly recommend you watch him against Cal Poly last season. He's a red zone threat, 39 touchdowns in 33 career games. Flat out, the kid is a baller. And last but not least, I've got a guard out of Harvard, Larry Allen Jr. The name sounds familiar. It should. He's the son of Hall of Fame guard Larry Allen, who played for the Cowboys and the 49ers. Larry Allen Jr. shows off great strength in his game. He's a physical interior lineman with excellent technique. He's got NFL bloodlines. You know, if you're wondering why he went to Harvard, you know, he chose an Ivy League school. He did have offers from bigger programs. I know he had an offer from UCLA. This is a kid I expect to have a very nice career in the NFL. And three guys that I want to mention as guys to watch is our P.J. Hall, defensive end out of Sam Houston State. 13 sacks a year ago. He's been a consistent performer throughout his career. He's got 36 sacks in 3 years. Chase Edmonds, running back out of Forum, topped 1,800 rush yards a year ago. He's actually 1,275 yards shy of setting the FCS all-time rushing record. And last but not least, I got quarterback Devontae Kincaid out of Grambling. This is a kid who transferred from Ole Miss. He's been through a lot of adversity. He keeps getting back up. He's got a phenomenal story. I highly recommend everyone listening to this. Check out his story. I wrote it recently on Draft Wire. But more than the story, the kid can play football. He threw 31 touchdowns last year at Grambling versus just 4 interceptions. He led them to a 12-1 record and a Celebration Bowl victory over North Carolina Central. He's a special kid who, like I said, has been through a lot. But he's a dual threat guy, and he can really be the wild card of the quarterback class as well.
I want to mention Larry Allen. For undisclosed reason, as far as I can tell, he had left the program and is not expected to play this year. So he may be a guy we have to wait on for another year. That was something that I had originally heard about in March, but I wasn't sure what the status. And I actually saw Dane Brugler of CBS tweet about that the other day. So Larry Allen, it's not to say that he can't, he is eligible for the draft, and he was expected to be in the mix this year. So it's possible that he does ultimately decide to throw his name in the mix. And I thought you were going to mention Sam Houston State quarterback Jeremiah Briscoe, because I keep hearing a lot of people talk about this guy. And if we're not going to talk about him, that's fine. I just wanted to wish him a happy 24th birthday, because he just had his 24th birthday about a week ago. So he's going to be a 25-year-old rookie, which is a red flag to me. But everybody's always looking for those small school quarterbacks, so I'm sure that we're going to hear a lot about that guy from Draft Twitter as things go. Justin, man, tons of great information. That was great. We really appreciate you coming on tonight. You know, these group of five prospects and these small school guys, we wanted two names. You had like 8 ready. That's incredible. Awesome job. You can follow Justin's work at Draft Breakdown, at DraftWire.com. Give him your Twitter handle, Justin.
Yeah, Twitter handle is JustinM_NFL.
He's got the NFL on his Twitter handle, so it's only a matter of time before this guy gets verified with a blue check mark. That was awesome, man. I really appreciate it. I hope we can have you on later on during the season to kind of catch up and see where we stand on some of these guys.
Well, definitely. I'd love to come back.
And, Justin, before we head out of here, anything special you're working on right now? I know you're writing all over the place. And just, you know, kind of let everybody know where they can find your work as well.
Well, I've recently published three pieces, actually, on some of the guys we talked about tonight. I interviewed Harold Landry for the draft breakdown. I also interviewed Richie James for the draft breakdown. Did a story on Devontae Kincaid for USA Today's Draft Wire. In terms of what I'm working on for the future, you know, it was last year in late February that I had an idea to interview the 2016 NFL draft class. I began to put that idea to work around February 27th, approximately 60 days before the draft. In that time frame, I interviewed roughly 30 of the 253 players that were drafted. So I was doing about an interview every second day. You know, this year, given that I have a head start, my goal is to at least double that number. So I'm hoping to interview at least 60 guys who will be drafted in the 2017 NFL draft class. So anyone who's taking time to read my work, I thoroughly appreciate it. And I'm just looking forward to connecting with everybody on Twitter. And you know, that's where you can catch me. Draft Breakdown, USA Today's Draft Wire. Hit me up on Twitter, JustinM_NFL. I look forward to interacting with anybody.
Don't let Luke Easterling work you too hard.
He's got me going, but it's been fantastic working with Luke. You know, working with him and working with Brian Perez, I honestly couldn't ask for two better guys.
Yeah, they're really nice guys. Brian's been great to us along the way. So, again, thanks a lot for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Well, thanks as always for listening, everybody. We're going to be back next week with our first kind of review and preview of the college football season. I can't believe it's here. It's already started. So Justin and I are going to try to do two shows a week for you this year, a review recap show of the weekend and kind of previewing the games coming up. We'll see how many we get to in that format. Thanks as always for listening. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on SoundCloud. We're now on Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, basically anywhere you can get a podcast. Make sure you're following us and all our guests. We highly recommend, not just because they're our guests, but because they know what they're talking about. We try to bring on knowledgeable people and, you know, help educate us and our listeners. So we appreciate Justin Mamello for taking time out of his busy schedule to chat with us for a little bit. Justin, I'll talk to you next week. And thanks, everybody, again, for listening, and have a great night.